he is very much aware of the promises that he made during the campaign, and he will stick to those promises.
Walker's administration looks for a solution to high energy prices in the interior. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Juneau School District removes text materials that were called insensitive to Alaska Native history.
We have been fighting these battles for a long time.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
Governor Bill Walker has released his predecessor's budget without changes and without endorsement. Former Governor Sean Parnell's budget would allocate $5.3 billion in state funding to operating expenses, a cut of 4% over last year's budget. The proposed amount for capital spending was also cut down to $200 million. Last year, Parnell first offered a budget with $400 million in capital spending, which then grew to $600 million after the legislature added projects and Parnell signed the bill. In a statement, Walker described Parnell's proposal as a starting point to meet a budget deadline that comes 2 weeks after inauguration. Pat Pitney, who was recently appointed Walker's budget director, also said in a statement that the new governor plans to remove some of the capital projects included in Parnell's budget. Walker has until February 18th to offer an amended budget. With oil prices below $70 a barrel, the state is expected to face a $3 billion deficit. When Bill Walker was running for governor, addressing the cost of consumer energy was a major part of his platform. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez looks at his plan for the short term.
At an October debate in Fairbanks, Bill Walker made this commitment.
The first thing I'll do as governor, I will issue a declaration of disaster on the cost of energy in interior Alaska.
Walker was sworn in as governor on Monday. While he addressed the cost of energy in his inauguration speech, an economic disaster declaration for the interior and for rural Alaska is still outstanding. Grace Jang, a spokesperson for the governor, says his staff is currently working on the declaration, but it won't be released this week.
The reason it hasn't been done right away is that he wants to have attached to that emergency declaration a clear pathway to an energy solution, and we're in the process of looking into that. He is very much aware of the promises that he made during the campaign, and he will stick to those promises.
Meanwhile, winter is setting in, and temperatures are starting to drop across the state. In the Fairbanks North Star borough, the perennially high cost of heating oil is being blamed for a rise in home foreclosures, and the state is considering stricter rules on the use of wood stoves to reduce air pollution. Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins participated in Walker's Consumer Energy Transition Committee. He says, given the economic and health impacts of high energy costs, a disaster declaration would be symbolically important to his community.
We aren't going to get the help from this FEMA group or that federal group because we're saying our energy prices are high. But what it does is it puts a marker well planted that everybody should be paying attention to.
An economic disaster declaration would also enable, but not necessarily guarantee, state assistance for energy relief. Hopkins says one thing the state could do would be to create financial incentives for people using heating oil, which is more expensive, over wood if they have dual heating systems.
The governor's not going to come in necessarily with a wheelbarrow of, here's all your money. But there's processes, I think, that could be put in place.
Hopkins says he would like to see a sustained effort to bring natural gas to Fairbanks. For them, it would be the financial equivalent of paying $2 a gallon on heating fuel. A drop in oil prices on the global market is expected to offer some relief to Alaska consumers. In Fairbanks, the price of heating fuel is hovering above $3.50 a gallon. Heating fuel prices have fallen below $3 per gallon in the lower 48. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
An Anchorage DJ has been charged with 5 felony counts related to possessing and distributing child pornography. The case highlights Alaska law enforcement's push to keep up with cybercrimes in a rapidly evolving digital environment. James LaPlante, who goes by Jimmy O'Brien during a morning radio show on Cash 107.5, was arraigned in an Anchorage court this afternoon. The Department of Law says that more than 1,000 explicit images were found on LaPlante's external hard drive, and that during an interview with law enforcement yesterday at his office, LaPlante admitted to storing images on his iPhone and work computer. Glenn Klinkhart is a retired APD detective who now runs a digital consulting firm. He says in the last 15 years, the department's cyber crimes division has become more proactive.
APD started kind of leading the forefront here in Alaska to go out there and actually do these cases, work in these different cases, whether it's file sharing of child pornography or actual online enticement where they're going into the chat rooms.
Finding evidence in cases like this is time-consuming. Encryption and constantly changing distribution practices make child pornography a moving target for officials to combat. Klinkhart says, given the number of crimes against minors in Alaska, agencies have had to be strategic in how they intervene.
We have a terrible amount of child abuse, you know, in the state. And you mix that with the technology, it's not uncommon that we have so many of these particular cases that come up. It's a mile wide and a mile deep, and we can only work so much. So we unfortunately, it's a target-rich environment, is what we say.
Bail was set at $25,000 for LaPlante, along with conditions that LaPlante have no contact with any minors or access internet-enabled devices. His next court appearance is on Tuesday in Anchorage. A fire destroyed Kivalina's only store this morning, leaving the Northwest Alaska Village of 400 without the food and supplies that were stored there. Colleen Swan with Kivalina's Volunteer Fire Department says she got the call around 1 o'clock this morning, but when firefighters arrived, the blaze had already engulfed the roof. Nothing could be done to save the store, so responders focused on preventing the fire from spreading to nearby buildings. Troopers are traveling to Kivalina to investigate the cause. One volunteer firefighter was medevaced after being sprayed with flame retardant, but has since returned home uninjured. Swan says the village's entire stock of food and supplies was destroyed, though hardware and non-food items stored separately in a warehouse were not damaged. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, enthusiasm and skepticism for Santa in New Talk.
Beard?
Yeah. It looks fake.
The beard.
Because it's white.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. And by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com.
The Anchorage NAACP is hosting a peaceful rally on Saturday in memory of 2 unarmed African-American men who were killed by police in the lower 48 over the summer. NAACP President Wanda Laws says Alaskans need to be part of the national dialogue about race relations and police actions.
We're not immune to that. We hope that it never happens here, but we need to recognize that there needs to be a national conversation. There are people who are frightened, and also we need to raise awareness that there needs to be more communication, there needs to be more understanding, and actually more community involvement.
Laws thinks communication between the local police force and minorities is good in Anchorage, and she says it's necessary to maintain that to prevent tragedies. The rally will start at 2 p.m. on Saturday in downtown Anchorage on 3rd and Cordova. The group is memorializing the 2 men. Eric Garner was put in a chokehold by a police officer in New York City in July and died. Michael Brown was shot by a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. Neither officer was indicted by grand juries. Juneau School Superintendent Mark Miller says the district will remove four controversial readers from the elementary school language arts curriculum. Back in August, community members raised concerns about texts depicting Alaska Native and Native American tragedies. The readers were called distorted, inaccurate, and insensitive. KTOO's Lisa Fu reports.
Superintendent Mark Miller didn't announce his decision alone. He brought along three Native elders who had all attended Native boarding schools. Charlotte McConnell was seven when her mother died and her father sent her and her siblings to boarding school. She was told by her aunt,
"You can't speak no Tlingit, you gotta speak English, you go in school." And so that's where I got understanding English only.
McConnell attended schools in Juneau, Seward, Wrangell, and Sitka. The loss of cultural identity at Native boarding schools is one of the experiences depicted in the McGraw-Hill Reading Wonders curriculum. Others were the Trail of Tears and the excavation of Native burial grounds. Miller says the readers don't meet the needs of Juneau students, but he says it's positive the curriculum includes instructional time for understanding Native experiences.
I am calling on the community to come together with the school district to document and tell your truth. Come into our classrooms. Help us teach our children about our local history.
Miller says most copies of the readers will be returned to the publisher and replaced with materials developed by the district in collaboration with Gold Belt Heritage Foundation and Sea Alaska. A few copies will be kept at the district office for students who want to read them. He says understanding culture and race is an important part of any student's education.
Whether in Ferguson, Missouri, Juneau, Alaska, or anywhere in between, difficult conversations and debates need to occur.
Paul Berg is a curriculum developer and cultural specialist at Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. His report on the readers was the formal complaint that led to their removal. He said the texts misrepresented the historical reality and marginalized the experiences of the victims. Berg is pleased with Miller's decision.
It's an opportunity to confront some uncomfortable historical facts and historical realities. And it's an opportunity to bring about healing. Healing within the Native community, but also within the non-Native community.
Frida Westman is Grand President of the Alaska Native Sisterhood. For her, the decision was the only one Miller could have made.
This was not a Native issue. It was an issue for all children. All Alaskans want their children to be educated correctly and be given the information, no matter what, but it depicts it truthfully. That's what history is about.
Westman says she's grateful for all the community members, Native and non-Native, who came together to make sure the materials were removed.
We have been fighting these battles for a long time. I personally have been. Over 40 years I've been doing this.
Westman hopes the district and the Alaska Native community will work together more closely from now on. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
An Alaska Native Corporation and the Great Land Trust have sealed a conservation partnership. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Iklutna Incorporated and the Great Land Trust have partnered on a land conservation project that will preserve over 1,000 acres of Iklutna Incorporated-owned land for subsistence use. The land is a prime area for hunting, berry picking, and fishing, and contains high-quality salmon and migratory bird habitat. Iklutna CEO Curtis McQueen says the deal helps balance growth and development in the valley with land conservation and cultural values. McQueen says the land is, quote, conserved for future generations of Iklutna people. The lands will remain under Iklutna ownership for use by shareholders, but public recreation access through permits will continue. Phil Shepard is executive director of the Great Land Trust. Shepard says the conservation agreement, although voluntary, is a legal agreement between a landowner and the land trust that permanently restricts future development and subdivision on the lands.
The funding comes from a variety of sources, some grant funding. We also get funding from wetland mitigation, and we pool all those funds together and use those funds to purchase the conservation easement and then put together a land management fund.
Shepard says the land management fund is accessible to both Iklutna and the trust. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Christmas is still 3 weeks out, but Santa Claus made an early visit to Newtok yesterday with the help of the Alaska Army and Air National Guard. KYUK's Ben Matheson reports.
The explanations for why Santa's on a different schedule range from needing reindeer rest to a new global delivery scheme. But in any case, he's with the Army National Guard as they launch a Black Hawk helicopter loaded with presents to Newtok. And in less than an hour, this sleigh is closing in on Newtok. The community of nearly 400 people located west of Bethel is eroding into the Ningaluk River. But for the students lined up in the school gym, there is only one thing that matters today. A long line of kids and their families waited to meet Santa and Mrs. Claus and get a present. Grant Kashatok, the Newtok principal, explains that the excitement's been building for weeks, but not without some pause.
We have a lot of skeptics out there. A lot of them are going to be here to say, are you for real? You know, that kind of thing.
Indeed, 6-year-old Nevaeh George and her classmates had a few questions.
We're thinking it's fake.
Why?
Wow. I'm not thinking it's fake because of the...
The beard?
Yeah. It's fake.
The beard.
Because it's white.
7-year-old William Andy held a nicely wrapped present after meeting Santa.
Can you tell me what you got?
Legos!
Dina Banez, co-chair of the Operation Santa Claus Board, says the event is only possible with the support of a long list of businesses and nonprofits, presumably run by elves.
Every child will get a backpack that's in kindergarten to high school. And inside those backpacks are school supplies, paper, pens, highlighters. And then there's some little tiny toys that are in there, a water bottle, some have, just little trinkets along the way.
And the present and new books. To top it off, Rich Owens, the chief ice cream tester for Tasty Freeze in Anchorage, is dishing out ice cream sundaes.
It's been intense. It's been great. Chocolate or caramel? Caramel, okay.
We've whipped out at 240 in 40 minutes.
The partnership for the Guard and Santa Claus has been going on for 58 years. In 1956, St. Mary's was the first community to receive a Christmas boost. Brigadier General Tim O'Brien is commander of the Alaska Air National Guard.
And we have armories in almost every outlying community across the strait. And we're always looking for more good folks, but just these are your neighbors. These are your friends and neighbors.
In the bleachers, Monica Casile enjoyed the afternoon with her kids.
Oh, man, this is the happiest of their lives.
Really?
Yeah.
After a couple hours, it's evident that the ice cream and presents are no doubt real. But really, Santa is 3 weeks early? After the bulk of the town had sat down with Santa, this reporter approached Mrs. Claus and her husband on behalf of the curious students.
Can you clear the air on that, please?
That's perfectly clear. Just take your hand right here. I want you to shake hands with him, just like we tell the kids.
How you
What's
doing?
That feel like? Is that real?
How you doing?
He's
real.
Pretty real to me, and his heart's as big as they come.
Shishmaref was also slated for a visit from Operation Santa Claus this weekend. In Newtok, I'm Ben Matheson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Children's Trust, working to prevent child abuse and neglect by encouraging all Alaskans to take small steps that can make a big difference in the lives of Alaska's children. Information at alaskachildrenstrust.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Children's Trust. Alaska Laborers Local 71 and the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities ask you to slow down in construction zones while they work to keep roads safe. Alaska Laborers Local 71, working hard for Alaska. This message is sponsored by Alaska Laborers Local 71.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Zachariah Hughes. This week on AK, Drumline. Imagine you're in middle school. You don't love math or history or any other subject, but there's this thing you look forward to every day after school. It's called Drumline. And a teacher at Clark Middle School thinks it can help kids learn about music and teach them some other skills, too. KSKA's Ann Hillman has the story.
After the bell rings one fall afternoon, kids flood out of Clark Middle School.
But about 30 of them stay behind in the multipurpose room, preparing to practice. They set down their backpacks, chat with their friends, and strap on their drum sets. Some heft mighty bass drums, while others grab sets of shiny brass cymbals. The band director walks in, and within seconds, the students are transformed from talkative kids to attentive musicians. Clark Middle School has the only drum line in Anchorage, though other schools are thinking of starting them. A drum line is the percussion section of a marching band, but at Clark, they play alone. The program began last year, and students can't wait to sign up. During practice, kids sit at tables until it's their turn to play. The school doesn't have enough of the four different types of percussion instruments for everyone. Even in the cavernous room, the sound is overwhelming. Leading the quad drum section is a slight, soft-spoken boy named Zakiah Charles. He says he's not really into any school subjects.
I don't like none. I don't really like, you know.
But Zakiah loves drumline.
It's just fun. Like, you don't have to, there's really no rules. It's just make it sound good.
He plays the quads, a set of four drums that, unlike the other drums, have various tones and pitches.
It's like more complex than the other drums and stuff like that. And I like it.
Zakiah also likes teaching his fellow students how to play and keeping them in line. He may not like school, but he says he wants to go to college at North Carolina A&T because of their nationally known drumline. His friend, eighth grader Vincent Miller, plans to join him. He's not very excited about school either, but drumming is his passion. He's the lead snare drummer. That's this one. Vincent says he picked the snare because it's like hitting a table. Vincent and Zakiah have written songs together and taught them to the rest of the drumline. Vincent also offers words of wisdom.
Like, say you're doing a stick flip, the more you worry about it, that's the more chance you're gonna drop it. If you just like breathe and just do it without thinking about it, you have less of a chance of dropping it.
Band director Adrian Carroll says the drumline kids are motivated student leaders. He's just there to give some guidance.
There's no students that work harder than the students involved in drumline. And some of them are, they just have such a passion and fire for music.
Carroll says drumline teaches the students life skills, like decision-making and confidence. He's used drumming and marching bands to inspire students in Montana, Texas, and even Costa Rica. He says for students who don't know much about music, he has them drum to the rhythm of words.
If it's a five, use hippopotamus, or you use hamburger if they're doing 16th notes. So you use little words like that, things they can relate to that they know, and they're like, oh, let me just beat the drum to this beat, this word, and it kind of tricks them into playing music without them realizing it.
Drumline has inspired some students to join Carroll's band class. He says that can lead to a little chaos. Drumline is about playing as loud as possible to be heard across a football field, though in Anchorage, they're more likely to be seen at ribbon cuttings and community events. Carroll often has to remind students that band class is comparatively sedate.
They're breaking out the drumline dynamics and playing forte. I'm like, all right, we're back into a concert setting, so we need to bring the volume level. Let's bring that down to a one, and my amp goes 1 to 10, let's turn it to 11 after school.
In the multipurpose room, he lets the kids make some noise, then teaches them to turn it into music.
8 on a hand, right first, 1, 2, da 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 da.
For AK, I'm Ann Hillman.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to Norvik, a town of about 650 people, located near Kotzebue in northwest Alaska.
My name is Bobby Wells. I'm currently acting administrator. I was born and raised here in Norvik, Alaska. It's a really nice place. It's a place down where the delta is. You know, there's probably about 6-7 rivers going out to the Kobuk Lake and also to the Sawak Lake. It's a church-oriented village. It was founded by a missionary and 70 others that came by here again in 1914. It's traditional where people gather for Christmas at the church, and we have a feast, and we have all kinds of the food which we're up throughout the year. We get some foods just from Barrow, like the whale, the blubber, and also from several other areas where we get the, we call nipchit, seal, down around Cotsview, seesaw, which is the white whale, beluga. We get all kind of food from different villages. It's mostly traditional foods. That's what it is. And we all enjoy the time together at the church. And New Year's, there's Eskimo games, probably for about 3 or 4 days. It's a competition kind of thing. And at the same time, they're like the fireworks and basketball games. They have probably about maybe 4 tournaments throughout the year. One is a huge tournament where we probably get about 20 teams in. We're always hustling and doing stuff, you know, being that we're pretty much in the center of probably about 6-7 villages all together. And, you know, when you need to get to the hub at Kotzebue, you got to come by here.
Bobby Wells is a lifelong resident and acting administrator of Norvik. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ann Hillman, Josh Edge, Annie Fight, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Zachariah Hughes.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes, Ann Hillman, and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Lisa Fu in Juneau, and Ben Matheson in Bethel. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fight. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quitline can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. Winter is a time to focus on home and family, a time for eating good food and telling stories. This season, the Salmon Project is thankful to be sharing Alaskan salmon stories from around the state. The Salmon Project celebrates Alaskans' deep personal relationships with salmon as food, a source of pride, a way of life, and as the focus of a lot of fun. To read Alaskan stories or share your own, visit salmonproject.org/story. Salmon, it runs deep in all of us. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.